Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
But on the show over the past few months, we've been taking a look back at some Irish tracks that have become classics, I suppose you could call them that in their own ways, over the years. We've had songs from the likes of Emotional Fish, Something Happens, Curb Dog, Dahi Mundi, etc. It's a chance to look at the story behind the song, the making of it, and what that time in their career was like for them. And today, I'm going to play a little bit of this now. What song is it? It's this one. We Don't Need Nobody Else from Whipping Boy, mid-90s, and guitarist Paul Page is on the phone now to have a chat about it. Paul, how you doing? Are you all right? Blank. Is he on the phone? No? Oh, he's not on the phone. He's on that. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Dave.
Oh, come on yourself. Yeah, very good indeed. Yeah, good man. Now, let's take a look. I mean, I was going to say what's the song about, but I mean, the song is really about Whipping Boy and the title. You never did need anybody else, did you?
No, I suppose as a band, we tried to kind of plough our own path, you know. At the time when that song was written, we just released our debut album, Submarine, and it just felt like things were stagnating for the band.
Yeah.
You know, so we retreated to this tiny rehearsal room on North Frederick Street. And I suppose that line, "We don't need nobody else," came first when we came to writing the song. And it was, I suppose, born out of a kind of a defiance. We recognised that it was just about the four of us, because some of the people that had been around the band, you know, started to drift away when they saw Submarine wasn't going to, you know, wasn't going to be a success. So it was just this realisation that we couldn't depend on anyone else, that it was sink or swim. You know, it was just about the four of us.
Okay, it wasn't going to be a success. I mean, define success. Is it that you bring out something and you really think it's going to be good and it really has to sell? And people loved the album but didn't necessarily put their money where their mouth is.
Yeah, I suppose my idea of success has changed over the years. Back then, it might have been, you know, about making a record that sold and that people loved at the time. But over the years, like, it's 26 years since Heartworm was released. The fact that album is still being talked about, that songs like We Don't Need Nobody Else are still being played and still being cited by people as a favourite song, I suppose that to me now is what success is really about. And a lot of the bands that I love, like, I think of bands like the Velvet Underground, who weren't successful at all at the time, but their music has endured. And for me, you know, the fact that Whipping Boy's music is still being played, that's a success in itself. And, you know, a lot of bands around that time would have written albums and songs on major labels and literally disappeared without a trace. You know, they had their shot. They may have sold a few records on the back of Britpop, but they're gone. Nobody's talking about them now. So
okay, well, this song then, like, you, there's Miles and Colin, there's yourself, and we're talking to Paul Page, by the way, on guitar, and then there's Fergal McKay is the guy. Does he come into the studio with this song fully formed?
So a lot of our songs, we would have written the music together, jammed it out in the rehearsal studio. But then Fergal would have brought, for this particular song, he would have brought the lyrics in. And I vividly remember when he came in with these lyrics the very first time. We instantly recognised the power of the words. I think it was the first time we felt we'd written a song that captured everything we wanted to be as a band. That kind of combination of dynamic, heavy guitars and lyrics that were direct, honest, unflinching, you know, just that was the moment, I think, that we realised this is what Whipping Boy are about.
So do you think you came up with some of your best songs by just kind of literally riffing and jamming about in the studio?
I do, yeah, yeah. I think a lot of Heartworm, certainly the music was all written in that way. Obviously, the lyrics, Fergal wrote most of the lyrics on Heartworm, but there were some lyrics that we collaborated on, but that's really his one, and it's probably one of his best pieces.
Yeah,
of work.
There was never any controversy about the two U2 lines, but they are funny, and you always were a fan of the band. But they built portholes for Bono so he could gaze out across the bay and sing about mountains. That's a true story of Fergal being in his house, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And people at the time maybe thought we were having a pop at U2, and I don't think that was the case at all. But yeah, Fergal somehow found himself invited to Bono's house. Now, I might add, he wasn't invited by Bono. I don't think he was in town at the time. And it was just an observation. Fergal, the way he told it to us was, Fergal said he would be of a similar stature in terms of his height. And he noticed when he was in the bathrooms that the windows were built quite low. And he just, his reflection was that they were built like that so Bonner could gaze out across the bay when he was in his bathroom doing what he does. So, yeah, it's a funny story, but it that's where that line came from.
Well, then 26 years later, why do you think people connect with it as much as they do? I mean, like, those re-release stuff came out recently and there was a huge amount of love for the album and the single and the song and the band and everything else and the why didn't you make it kind of thing much bigger. Why do you think it is?
I think the honesty of the words seemed to resonate with people. I mean, it doesn't really follow the blueprint for what would make an obvious commercial hit. The lyrics are very dark, but we were very good as a band at not trying to self-censor. You know, we didn't write songs with the mindset, would this make a good hit single or a radio-friendly song? And I suppose to hear, you know, some of the lines in that song, like line, I hit you for the first time today, it's almost chilling in the way that it was delivered. Domestic violence wasn't really standard fare in pop music back then. It wasn't really talked about in Irish society at all. So I think people were taken aback by hearing that surfaced in a rock song in that way. But I think they respected the fact that we were writing about something like that in such a...
writing about something like that. Was that Fergal writing about himself?
No, and I think that's a dangerous assumption to make. And I think it's an assumption that people make about songs in particular. We wouldn't make that assumption about a filmmaker or someone who writes a book, that they're writing about everything that directly affects
them. True, but at the same time, like, he sings this line and then it kind of like you think he's kind of gone away from it. And then he comes back, yeah, and you thought you knew me. I mean, it's heavy stuff, you know, so it's not, you're telling me it's not Fergal. That's fine, I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, I it is heavy stuff and I wouldn't deny that. And, you know, it's not something we ever had conversations about, but I know we wrote a lot of songs that were about direct experience, but about the experience of people around us and things that we observed and people we grew up with and situations we found ourselves in. Yeah. And I think, you know, it is a big leap to make that songwriters, you know, are writing directly about themselves. As I said, a filmmaker, you know, an author can write about, write, and people don't make that
there
assumption.
Is an element, though, that he did kind of, he scared people in some ways, because it was like the band were quite unsettling live, to say the least. I mean, like, when you play a place like the Late Late Show, which would not be your sort of regular whipping boy audience necessarily, Fergal walks in, and were the audience happy?
I think you're right. The word was unsettled. And I think that was something that we thrived on, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
We loved that. And it's because the music that we listened to and influenced us had that similar effect. Like when you listen to Lou Reed singing a song like Heroin, you know, it's very unsettling. And I suppose that night at the Late Late Show, I know afterwards, we did get a kick out of the fact that we did something out there that didn't unsettle the audience. It wasn't standard Late Late Show fare. It was just something that as a band, it was part of our identity, I think, at the time. Yeah. We did enjoy that side of it.
And the backstory would be everything from, I don't know, Big Black to the Pixies, but in particular Sonic Youth, I suppose.
Sonic Youth certainly were a big influence on Submarine, our debut
the
album.
First
the
album,
early,
yeah.
Yeah, the early EP is a real influence. I remember someone reviewed Submarine and said, buy Submarine and get Evol and Daydream Nation free or something like that. It was generic, very generic. But I think by the time we got to Heartworm, we'd started to move into a space where the songs were beginning to sound just more like us. There was influences in there, but we didn't wear them on our sleeves as obviously.
Do you remember you did a gig? Do I remember you doing a gig for a Phil Lynott thing and you used Phil's lyrics from something, or you were supposed to do a Phil Lynott song, but I don't know what it was.
We did the Phil Lynott anniversary gigs and they asked us to play. We weren't really good at cover versions at the time, but Fergal had this book of Phil's poems and one of them is Shades of a Blue Orphanage.
Yeah.
And we wrote our own music for that and used it at that gig. And then we kept the music and wrote When We Were Young, one of our own songs, using that music. So it's a B-side and it's on the new Heartworm expanded edition that we reissued this year. So yeah, a lot of people actually like that version better than when we were young, because Phil's lyrics are incredible.
And when you're talking about these reissues from now 2021, are we talking the whole double vinyl, the full whack, is it?
Full Whack, yeah. It was remastered in Abbey Road, and there's a bonus disc of B-sides, live material, and demos. It was something that had, you know, people have been asking for years. Like the vinyl for Heartworm, you know, it was around 95 when CDs were the real big format. So I think there was very few vinyl pressed up at the time. So, you know, with the vinyl revival now, we've been asked for years about is there any chance Heartworm will be reissued. So we were delighted when a UK-based label, Needle Mythology, asked us would we be interested in reissuing it. So, yeah, it just came out in September and it's doing really well at the moment.
Okay, by the way, we're talking to Paul Page here. We're talking Whipping Boy. We're talking 51552, if you'd like to ask Paul a question yourself. I mean, the name Whipping Boy, when there were princes in early Europe years ago, like, and the prince would do something wrong, a minion, a nobody would get the crap beaten out of them because, you know, they were the whipping boys or whatever. But you used to have a female in the band and it was Lolita and the Whipping Boy, was it?
Yeah, right at the beginning, we did have a girl in the band with us. I think she may have only played one show and left. So it was very short. It was right at the very early stages. So we dropped and just changed it to Whipping Boy. So, it had that kind of edge and a little bit of darkness about the name as well, which was something, again, that we liked.
And that word unsettling comes into it and all, like, you know, kind of, you know, like, scary stuff as well. Because, you know, Fergal did, you know, like, people are going to go, sorry, what? He did cut himself with glass on stage, didn't he?
Again, yeah, that might have happened once in the early days.
Okay,
you know, in the underground, we used to play in the underground, and, you know, but like, people always focus in on those things. But he was very unpredictable on stage, and that went right through to, you know, the Heartworm times. He was what makes a great frontman is that ability to, you know, the unpredictability. You don't know what's going to happen, and I think he had that. He definitely had that, and was a huge part of what made us, you know, a live band and a good live band on our night. We had some terrible gigs as well, but on our night, I think we could be, you know, we could be a really great band, and Fergal was a massive part of that.
So, you know, we were talking about some of the stuff from 2021 earlier in the programme, and there's a lot of people sort of talking about the idea of, and I'll call it, singing about mental health. Was Fergal singing about mental health a long time before most people were?
We've a track on the album, A Natural, which some people are really, you know, if you think We Don't Need Nobody Else is unsettling, that's really dark stuff. And I remember when he brought that to us at the time, we kind of asked him, we said, are you sure about this? This is, you know, this is probably going further than we've ever went with any piece of music before. But again, it's a track that was a hidden track, I think, on the album originally. We have it now on the reissue. It's just a really dark, it goes to very dark places. And yeah, mental health, again, not talked about very much back then at all. And it's great to see now that bands are a lot more open in bringing that out and surfacing those kind of issues. But
we also played For Those I Love earlier on, David Balfe. And there's a mention of When We Were Young, isn't it? Name checked.
That's right. Yeah. And David's album's incredible. I just picked it up yesterday on vinyl. I've been waiting for ages for it to come out, but it has to be one of the best Irish albums of the last 10 years. And I met David during the summer, and he was mentioned how much that song meant to him and his mates when he was growing up. So I was just blown away by it. It's just incredible to see that, you know, some of the music has influences on people that you didn't even realize, you know, people who are making great music now.
Yeah, there's one here. It says, Whipping Boy are the quintessential Irish indie sound. Remember seeing them on Jules Holland back in the 90s. Amazing performance. That's from Dez in Dublin 12. Funny thing is that I remember that too on Jules Holland. And one of the things is just is the motif, the kind of the run through, if you like, I don't know, the chorus, those notes, those four notes or the whole thing. It just kind of, it's not so much Quiet Loud before that. It's not so much Pixies or anything, but it really works, doesn't it, in terms of, whoa, you can feel the audience go, right, now I see where this song is going.
Yeah, that the chorus kind of pulls it back, pulls the song together, and it's I suppose it does have an almost anthemic feel because of that chorus. It's that simple four notes. It reminds me a little bit of Satellite of Love by Lou Reed, that kind of chorus where it's just four notes that just work really well together. It's funny, I mentioned this, Lou, we toured with Lou Reed in 96, and we did a European tour with him, and we were coming off stage one night, and he was passing us by singing the chorus of We Don't Need Nobody Else. And he just turned to us and says, if that's not a hit, I don't know what is. Which goes to prove Lou was an amazing songwriter, but a hopeless judge of what makes hit singles.
Okay, well, listen, just one or two other things about all that at the moment. Obviously, you know, a couple of Irish tabloids tried to stir up controversy about that line. You mentioned that earlier on. But I mean, like, you know, the other bands and artists that were hanging around, who was like, I'm not saying there was no way Whipping Boy were part of a scene, but who else was hanging around that you would have kind of related to?
Yeah, well, we played that roller coaster tour with Revelino. I think you compared that tour, Dave, at the time.
All 10 of them throughout the 90s. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so Revelino were a band we really liked. There was The Thrills as well, Curb Dog. So there was loads of good bands, and we'd kind of grown up. The 80s were a particularly fertile time for, you know, the Irish music scene. Blue in Heaven, A House, Something Happens.
But you were kind of 88 to 98, were you?
Yeah, we 88. Yeah. We were only really forming. It was really in the 90s where we were going. You know, I think Submarine was around, early 90s. So, yeah, but those were the bands that I remember at the time. Again, we didn't really hang out on the scene, and I remember we won 3 Hot Press Awards and turned up at the after show party, and they wouldn't let us in. they didn't recognize us at all. So we weren't really on the scene known as a band that much. You know, we didn't have a big public profile at the time.
All right, well, listen, I should play the song. Good Man Yourself, Paul. Thanks a million for talking to us. Paul Page, it is Whipping Boy. Paul, happy Christmas, and thanks very much.
Dave Fanning, Weekends on 2FM.